Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, November the 22nd. That's an important date, if I remember from my history. Of course, it was 59 years ago that President Kennedy was assassinated right here in Dallas, about 8 miles the other way. Today, we'll be catching up with our good friend, Leslie Eastman. Leslie, contributor to Legal Insurrection. So let's say hello to Leslie. You're looking good. How are you?
Thank you, Silvio. Happy to be here and beginning the Thanksgiving celebration with your wonderful audience and discussing the after effects of the election in earlier this month. So it's really, really good to be here today. Thank you for
Thank you.
Me once
again. Oh, it's always my pleasure. But let's begin with something really fun, and that's Thanksgiving. It usually means a get-together, a family get-together, but is there anything special that you do? Is your son going to be over this year for Thanksgiving, for example? So tell us, just give us a little update on what you and your family are going to do for Thanksgiving.
Well, fun you should ask. Blake is due home tonight.
Right.
After he arrives, the pampering and spoiling will begin. He will be here through Sunday. And we are going to really take care of this young man because we're so proud of him. And for those of you who may not know, he's a junior at the U.S. Air Force Academy, majoring in physics. He did a presentation for a space conference in Hawaii, first author on a poster. I am so proud of him. So that was wonderful. And the big family tradition, which I'm ever so grateful for, I hate to cook. I really hate to cook. And so my in-laws are taking us out to dinner. Once again, I am very blessed with my in-laws. So we are going to be going to a wonderful Belmar restaurant, ordering up some turkey. I don't have to cook. And I will not have to do cleaning either. So it is a wonderful thing.
Well, now that you mentioned that you're going out for Thanksgiving dinner, remember that movie, The Christmas Story, where they go out to the Chinese restaurant? For was it Christmas or Thanksgiving?
It was Christmas because Christmas got ruined by
right.
Hungry dogs.
Yes, exactly. So every time I think of going out to eat on a holiday, I'm reminded of that movie. Well, I'm sure you'll have a great time when Blake gets in, and please congratulate him on his amazing success. He's a wonderful young man. I've seen his photos. He's not only amazing, but he's starting to look really good. So he looks really handsome. So those girls must be starting to pay attention, I would think, to him.
I will be the last to know. If I'm really lucky, he'll invite me to the wedding.
I understand. I have three of them, and I know how particular they are about those things. I don't know what it is, but they are. So one of ours is still single, and I have a hard time keeping up with him. So I don't know. That's just the way it is. I guess new generation. It's a new generation. Maybe they, so you have to respect their wishes. Well, let's get something serious. And let's get into something serious. It looks like it was the Golden State, your beautiful state, that put the Republicans over the top at the House, over at the U.S. House. And it happened, I guess, the one that actually made it official was a particular congressman who I have followed for a couple of years, Mike Garcia. I think he's somewhere around the L.A. area, I believe. And he won that district, so that made it 218, made it official. But now there's a few others who are also winning. So we're delighted that the Golden State is doing its part to create a Republican majority. That's wonderful, Leslie.
Well, there's good news and there's bad news, Sylvia.
Okay.
And I love it that California brought the GOP over the top. And it's going to give a shout out to my peeps who are staying in the state, fighting the good fight. So we have districts that still remain Republican. And that is a good thing. However, the joy must be met with some consideration of the realities on the ground. And the realities of the ground is that we really didn't move the needle in California. We held most of the districts that we held. I think there was one race. I wrote an article on the slow process of counting the harvested ballots in California. Some of our counties are really not that well off. They have limited resources, and the process of counting all those mail-in ballots, where you have to double check the signatures and double check to make sure there's only one vote, it's a very time-consuming process. And so we might have gained one additional seat. The good thing I can say, however, is that between all the efforts that have gone forward to for the Californians who are in the Republican Party to actually learn the process of ballot harvesting and not fight it, but participated and learned how to make it work effectively, This is probably the most significant thing coming out of our state today. So we held on, and not only that, with the Democratic Party spent millions here because of the fight that they might have spent somewhere else. So that allowed us to retain the House, so that is also a very good thing. But we're still clearly a lot of work to do to salvage this state and hopefully push back on some of the more robust, progressive policies that the Biden administration will continue to push for in the upcoming couple of years before the next election.
That's right. Well, I agree with you. I agree with you that it was a good effort in California, but, you know, there are some problems as well. But at least we can celebrate that it was Mike Garcia, representative in the L.A. area, someone who I have followed. He's such an exciting personality. You know, he's a former, I think he was an Iraq War veteran, a businessman. The profile is absolutely incredible of this candidate. And being Hispanic, I thought that was also cool. So I just love the fact that it was Mike Garcia who scored the winning run or made it 218. And I think it looks like it's going to end up between 221 and 222. That's not a huge majority, but it is, you know, it doesn't matter whether you win the World Series in four games or seven games, you still get the same trophy.
Yeah, that's the truth. And the joy of not having Nancy Pelosi as speaker, it's a lot to hang on to. I'm enjoying it immensely.
That's the best news of it all. That was the best news. The fact that she's not going to be around.
Yeah, and one other thing. It's hopeful that the designated leader, majority leader, or Speaker of the House, I should say, Kevin McCarthy, is serious about not permitting some specific Congress members onto committees. If the Republicans learn anything, it's that if the Democrats are going to play that kind of hardball, going the gentleman route and just not responding in kind doesn't teach them the proper lesson. Right. I think by making those committee decisions, maybe the Democrats will be a little bit more thoughtful in what they do to Republicans when things are reversed in election cycles. At least for the time being, you can assume they'll be up at the ebb and flow to parties in charge. And, so I think the Democrats will learn some valuable lessons, but hopefully the Republicans will learn some too, is that our electorate, the ones who got, are not necessarily happy with the Washington, D.C. elite beltway game, and maybe trying to pay a little bit more attention to citizens outside of the beltway.
Yes. No, I think you're right. And I think I'm excited about Kevin McCarthy. I think I think he's going to be okay, but he does have some challenges because when you have a small majority, you got to keep it together. And sometimes keeping together a group in the majority is more difficult than in the minority. Well, let's talk about something that is fascinating. Oh, by the way, I do want to ask you about counting votes. You mentioned that some of the counties don't have the resources, and that's why this is happening. How can that be? I'm just curious. How can that be? Because it's only a California problem. For other counties seem to be doing okay in other places. So why is that?
It's a California problem, kind of like each state has its own system. Each county has its own system. And unfortunately, a lot of our counties that aren't in the, shall we say, Los Angeles, San Francisco zone, are Central Valley, you know, Central California, off to the east, and they are not wealthy. They don't have all the latest gadgets. They don't have extra dollars. In Kern County, where one of the districts I mentioned, they're still counting the votes. There is one counting machine counting all those votes. They don't have the funding. Sacramento is not inclined to give them more funding for whatever it is, because those traditionally will vote more conservative. And that is a big struggle within this state, is that there are essentially two Californians in one. You get the coastal California with the elite and the glamorous Hollywood types, you know, Los Angeles, and the sophisticated San Francisco Bay Area types. And then you get the farmers and those producers in the rest of our state who are trying to squeeze and get their needs met, with Sacramento sucking up all the money and directing it to the progressive special interest groups. You'll find that's why a lot of our infrastructure, like dams, just not being maintained properly. And lots of issues fall out of that there are two disparate states in this. And
right.
We aren't the only one. You might follow legal insurrection. Those of you who might see that we're following the greater Idaho movement, where Oregon and their red staters, so to speak, want to go ahead and secede into Idaho. So a lot of different moving parts, with a lot of people very tired of small areas dictating the lives of people in the different parts of the state. You know,
in fact,
great
exactly. And I read the same thing, that there's a movement in the state of Illinois to do the same thing, to separate from Cook County, because there, I think the corruption in Cook County is such that if you live in the rest of the state, I mean, you're a second class citizen in all respect. But one of the things about counting votes that you said, I think it's very interesting, because I agree with you. I think the Republicans have to catch up with the Democrats. And if they're going to do ballot harvesting, we should master it. If they're going to do whatever they do, we should do it the same thing. And on mail-in ballots, I'm not a fan of that. But if those are the rules they're going to come up with, then we got to play their game. I mean, you play whatever game you got to play. I like what we do in Texas. I like the way we do elections here. We have 2 weeks of early voting where you have to vote in person and identify yourself and all of that. So we have that. And I like that. I've used it often. And then we have what we call absentee. If you cannot make it for whatever reason, my mother 1 year voted absentee because, in fact, it was the year of the pandemic, because we didn't want her out there making a line, you know, and we just didn't want her going through that. So she voted absentee that year. And then the other way you vote is on election day. And it seems to be working okay, the system that we have here. It's not much different from what they have in Florida. But if the Democrats are going to design a system, that we need to master it and get as good at harvesting or mail-in ballots or early voting. I'm sure you're familiar with what happened in Pennsylvania, where Mr. Fetterman ran for the Senate, and they put all those votes in the bank before anybody could see him on TV. And that's why they won. So we need to get good at...
I wish Pennsylvania the joy of their new senator.
Yes, I agree. But you got to play the game. You know, it's like forgive me for using a baseball analogy, but if you're playing a team that likes to run the bases a lot or steal bases, then you got to get a catcher who can throw them out, or you got a pitcher who can hold. You have to adjust to whoever you're playing. And I think, like you indicated earlier, we tend to be gentlemen and we're gonna be nice gentlemen here. No, you can't do that.
No. Those rules are now retired in favor of rules that will actually work for the benefit.
Absolutely.
Of citizens who wish to be represented, not spending all our money, not taxing us to death, not making a lot of inane rules that cripple our businesses, small little means like this.
Right. No, I agree. I think I'll just say one last thing on this topic, and then we'll go to your latest post on reparations. My friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, he's got you were on the show one time with him, if you remember, a few years ago. In fact, I think Blake also joined us that day, if you remember. This is about 10 years ago when this happened. But Barry Castleman told me the other day that the Democrats play to win, and we play to show up. No, that's got to change. We got to play to win, too, like as much as they do. We have to be as tough as they are, and I'm optimistic that that's what we will be. Okay, let's talk about an article that you wrote, fantastic article about a news story that is just going around, I guess, in the last 48 hours, and that is that the United States, and I guess other countries, are going to pay reparations over climate change or something like that. So please tell me, Leslie, tell me how crazy this is, because I'm sure you must think it's crazy. I'm assuming you think it's crazy.
Well, let me give you some background. There is an annual conference, and I have covered that annual conference ever since I've been a writer for Legal Insurrection. It's the Conference of Parties, and this one happens to be the 27th version. And what they vision is a global treaty which will theoretically reduce all the carbon dioxide, reduce the greenhouse gases, drive down the temperature of the globe, and everybody will live happily and joyfully with all this great temperature. Well, controlling climate by humans is not something that is achievable, I believe. I do not think we're ever going to achieve it. That being said, what this conference turns out to be is a great excuse for a luxury vacation among the global elite to jet in for with their private jets, and there are about 400 of those private jets that showed up to Sharm el-Sheikh, and they wanted to demonstrate some movement in getting a global pact because not every country agrees with the grand vision. And one of the aspects of this grand vision many don't agree with is the goal of reducing the temperature by 1.5 degrees Celsius, because not only is that ridiculous, it's not going to be achievable unless an asteroid slams into the planet, brings up dust, and all of a sudden we have a global temperature drop. And since we've got a new system up there that we've just experimented with, we can detonate asteroids or move their trajectories, maybe it's not going to happen. But that being said, what this really is taking money and taking power and giving it to these people to enact their bureaucracies so they get funding and they get privileges, and then they can distribute with other like-minded people, ignoring science against a lot of the stupidity they put out, ignoring the fact that their green tech actually in many ways very harmful to the ecology, and basically making their science narrative instead of basing decisions on sensible policy and science fact. Now, to fund a lot of this and to make sure they have money to, get their political connections all taken care of, they've created a loss and damage fund. So wealthy countries who apparently have been polluting and contributing to all these global warming gases get to pay into the fund. And then those developing countries will use the fund, and it's nothing more than climate reparations. The trouble is manyfold. The first part of the problem is China, the biggest emitter of our global warming gases, is not paying a damn dime. Problem number one. Problem number two is that President Biden promised $1 billion in put $1 billion into the kitty. And I think our Congress is going to have a few things to say about that particular expenditure. But beyond that, if you look at the quality of life for humanity, it is our Western countries, it is our American capitalism, our civilization that has really created a lot of the technology and a lot of the fuel efficiencies that allow us to have a much better, healthier, longer, more robust life. It really, we have contributed more to humanity than not. So we are being punished in a way for being contributed. And what I find most interesting is that John Kerry, our climate czar, took away using the term climate reparation, that it wasn't really applicable. And as I noted in my analysis, if it looks like a reparation, it is a reparation, and nobody else is buying it either. You have the editorial boards of Wall Street Journal and New York Post blasting the Biden administration for this inanity, and it just put another, you know, item on the Republican in Congress list that they can figure out how to deal with next year.
Yeah, you mentioned a bunch of things that were very interesting, and I was making some notes as you spoke. The first one, you're right, China. I mean, they benefit, but they don't pay. I mean,
they were not agreeing to the 1.5 Celsius limit, and nor was India, and those are our two biggest
emitters. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's right. So you have China and India who are not playing. They didn't play either with the Paris Climate Change Accords, if you remember. They didn't play with that either. But the other thing you mentioned, and I don't know if you meant that it was legally a treaty. What treaty is that? Because a treaty
it's a pact.
Oh, okay.
It's not been agreed to by our Senate.
Okay.
It's
all right. No, because that's the key. That's the key for people. I mean, because I've had this discussion with people in other countries, a Canadian fellow that I was talking to, who was talking to me about the Paris Climate Change Accord. And this was a couple of years ago when it first came up. And I said to him, it's unenforceable. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, it was never approved by the U.S. Senate, which is the one that would have the last word on any international treaty. And as I explained to him, something you know, President Obama in that time does not have the authority to go somewhere and basically cut a deal with other countries about anything without consulting with the U.S. Senate. So the Paris Climate Change Accord never went to the Senate. The Iran nuclear deal never went to the Senate. And this right here, I don't care who runs the Senate. They don't have 2/3 votes to approve this treaty. And you're right. The House is going to figure out how not to give him the money. So, you know, President Biden is over wherever he was telling people a bunch of things that he cannot deliver on, Leslie.
Yes. And this differs from his normal behavior in what way?
No, I know. It's like promising to the students, we're going to cut your college debt. And they all vote. I mean, this is crazy. They all voted something like huge numbers voted Democrat, all these young people thinking that President Biden was going to cut their college debt. And now they're finding out that judges don't think it's constitutional, which isn't constitutional any more than this reparation is. But, you know, they do it anyway. I guess they like to feel good when they say these things, Leslie.
Yeah. So, and this is what it is. It's a photo opportunity. It's a chance for fancy dinners and, you know, high-powered meetings and media attention. And, you know, it's beginning to be recognized for what it is. And every year, the comments on social media get a little harsher. People, especially after having lived through the pandemic, where we got a real quick snapshot of what happened when you're making policy decisions on bad science, is a trouble with global warming science is it's decades in advance. Whereas with the pandemic, we saw things that were up close personal much more swiftly. And I think now people are beginning to really question when you say experts say, are they real experts really saying this? Is it true? You know, and or are they also ignoring other experts who may have a different opinion?
Right. Yeah, they're just they're the experts you like. You know, I mean, they're the experts you like. The ones that say these things are the ones you like, so you put them on your article and you say, look what these experts are saying, and then you forget there's other experts who disagree with them. Leslie, one last point that we want to get into. Time is flying and we have a few minutes, but the pandemic, I know you've been writing a lot about this. It's one of your favorite topics at Legal Insurrection.
Well, I wouldn't say it's my favorite topic, but as I'm the science and tech writer for that side, it kind of fell to me.
So let's say you were entrusted the duty, I guess, of doing that. But you always wrote wonderful things. And so where are we now? I mean, you see a rebellion among parents in schools. We got scores of kids who are behind. I mean, the kids have paid a price for this, and parents are not happy. They shouldn't be. So give us a little overview. I guess we have a few minutes left, but as much as you can wrap it up and give us an overview of where we are with the pandemic and what you've been writing about lately.
Well, I think the place to begin is with the Atlantic article, where one of the true believers was asking for pandemic amnesty. And I wrote a very well-received response to that. And there's three R's, and the three R's come from Dr. Lori Schlesinger. And Dr. Lori Schlesinger, amazing talk show host I listened to in the early 90s, and I learned a lot from her to how to look at things, which is valuable. And there were three R's for forgiveness. One was to express true regret for your decision, and just being busted justly for the consequences of your decisions is not a level of regret. The other is repair. How are you going to repair things? And I would ask those who enforce the policies in, you know, led, you know, really awful things, denied people jobs, denied people presence in social media, you know, made decisions based on these policies. How are you going to repair the education of our children? How are you going to repair the reputations of the doctors and medical professionals and other epidemiologists who had issues with everything that was being done? How are you going to repair, people who did not receive the consolation of spending the last few hours of their loved one's life because they were not permitted into the hospital? I mean, I went through a list of about 12 different things that I don't see a way of repairing. So no, there's no true regret. There's no way to repair it. And I am not certain that these people will not repeat it. And not repeating is probably the biggest thing if you're going to ask for that type of amnesty. So my take on it is no amnesty. And what is very troubling now is there is beginning to be a walk back that is occurring under the radar, where our press isn't really reporting on it, but they're walking back a bunch of things. And one of the things that is being walked back is ivermectin. One of the big things I've always pressed is that early treatment, we really need to explore early treatment options. And ivermectin in studies in Brazil and India showed a great deal of promise for early treatment, and it had to be early treatment. But the studies that were selected, which did not really involve true early treatment conditions and set it up for failure, those are the ones that promoted. And the FDA basically said, you should not use this for COVID. And there's documentation that they did. Now, the FDA is walking that back, saying it was never something to enforce. It was simply a recommendation. And we are not going to forget about ivermectin and what truly happened. I am sure as time goes on, the things that we are most worried about or have stated, like the ineffectiveness of masks, the use of hydroxychloroquine, the effects of the vaccine, especially on our young people, are all going to be found to be true. And yet all these policies were enforced, silenced on social media. And I will say this, I have remained on Twitter. And the difference between Twitter now and Twitter then is vast. Thank you, Elon Musk. I feel I am getting a lot more feedback, a lot more promotion. I see accounts coming back for people who were silenced during the COVID craze. So I think Elon Musk is to be commended, and his team of engineers are to be commended at the changes they've already made on Twitter.
That's
so
right.
That is a fabulous thing.
I wonder, when I first heard about this amnesty from The Atlantic, I kept wondering if that was connected with Musk buying Twitter. Maybe it's a crazy connection that I made, but I kept thinking now they're not going to have Twitter to carry their water anymore as they did before. But yes, I am in Twitter, and I for a long time didn't participate, but now I do post. Like, we'll post this on Twitter later today. And I find Twitter to be much better now. At least the quality of the stuff is a lot better now. Whether he can survive financially or not, I don't know. But the quality is better.
I think what they've discovered is that the traffic has shot up dramatically. And not only that, Elon has a satellite system, Starlink, that is going to make things like this usable all over the planet much easier. He's got every motive to make this a success. And as I'm fond of saying, he invited Trump back on. Whether or not Donald Trump comes back on or not is immaterial. The fact that he can, I think, is the important thing.
Right.
Making speech free again. Thank you so much, sir.
No, I agree with that. He also brought back the Babylon Bee.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, because there is no reason for them to be disconnected from Twitter. Leslie,
hey, listen, I made a small joke once using my gallows humor, and I almost got tossed off of Twitter. That is how sensitive these weenies were. And
right.
To see the before and after picture with Elon Musk and his troop of high quality engineers, that did me a world of good. And again, I can see my traffic, I can see my shares and posts and my team
right.
as well, and it's been really awesome.
No, I think it's great. I'm glad that he bought it. We needed that, to say the least. We needed a better Twitter than what it became. Leslie, as always, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I wish you again a very happy Thanksgiving. And it's always a great treat to have you on the show, because we learn a great deal from you and your writings at Legal Insurrection. So can you give us a quick update of your next article and anything that you're ready to go publish anytime soon?
Well, I, interestingly enough, and this is actually a little announcement for Legal Insurrection, please be on the lookout. There is going to be a special December 11th event. We're going to invite a guest to discuss about wokeness in the U.S. military academy. So that is a very exciting development. And Bill Jacobson, the editor and leader of Legal Insurrection, in 2023 is taking us big time, more court cases, more focus on fighting back on these policies, more work on free speech and, you know, protecting the rights of students and those on campus to express themselves fully without cyberbullies silencing them. So a lot of work in 2023, and we're just hoping everybody comes over, donate if you can, participate if you are able, and we would really welcome everybody.
Well, it's a great website. It's a great website, yeah. Legal Interest. It's absolutely great, and please give our best to Professor Jacobson and all the other contributors, and wish him a happy Thanksgiving. And I wish you a happy Thanksgiving, Leslie.
Thank you. We will have to do our annual Christmas show.
Yes, that's coming up. That's coming up. All you got to do is tell me when, and we will do it.
On the books, I am sure.
Yeah, you'll let me know when we do it, and we will schedule it like all the other ones. Thank you so much, Leslie. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for joining us. And it's always a great honor to have you. To have you on the show. Our good friend Leslie Eastman, contributor to legal insurrection, and we call her a great friend of our show because she is. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, Leslie, and bye-bye, everybody out there.